Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip, but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 268, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. I am excited. I'm Chris Featherstone. Of course, follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling, Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling. Our weekly interview today is by someone whose light is so bright that they used to call him Nova. Now he is a good old money making Mike Bucci. That is his new gimmick. But for those WWE fans, they know him as Simon Dean. How are you tonight, sir?
Very good. I'm all the above. Nova, Simon Dean, Mike Bucci, Hollywood Nova. All the above.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So just a few things. When we had our interview scheduled for tonight, I was just really interested because you've done a lot outside within TV as well, as far as just from a television standpoint. But a lot of people don't know. You've said this in previous interviews, candid interviews. But a lot of people know how much. A lot of people don't know how much backstage influence you've had as well. So we'll talk about a little bit of that as well. My first question to you, Mike, is: you are instrumental for creating the Blue World Order, one of the most popular factions in all of ECW. We're taking over. Just such an amazing faction. Of course, the Blue World Order, Blue Meanie, you and Stevie Richards, mocking the NWO in a very fun and exciting and infectious way. So you were very, very instrumental in the heyday of WCW. WWE bought WCW and ECW, and they put their own version and stamp on it. Now, a lot of people feel a certain way about WWE's version of ECW. Most are very negative. What is your take as far as being, you know, instrumental in the popularity of the original ECW? What's your take on WWE's version?
It was shot with the other shows. It had nothing to do with ECW. They brought around some of the older ECW guys and put them out there and looted them and watered them down. I honestly think they thought they could just... They bought it for the library. The library for it. But
right.
When they had it, they literally just stuck it out there. Didn't really know what to do with it. Told Tommy he could run with it, which he obviously didn't get a chance to. They never knew what they had. And they didn't understand it. Same thing they did when they brought back the NWO. They tried to in WWE.
Yeah.
And they collapsed that and killed it. And then when the first time they brought Goldberg back, but they brought Goldberg to WWE, they brought that up and they kind of screwed up and killed it. So many times in the past, if they had a chance to bring the Four Horsemen into WWE, they would have brought that up and screwed that up too.
Yeah.
A lot of things that they create that when they bring it in and they kind of rebrand it or try to redo it again, it's just not the same. And it ruins it. And ECW is a perfect example of that. It should have been NXT is exactly what ECW should have been. Think about it. NXT, so if I say to you, hey Chris, I'm going to start a new company and we're going to run kind of intimate setting on a show. It's going to be kind of underground-ish. We're going to take different body types and different fighting styles from around the world. We're going to put these guys in competitive matches. It's not super storyline driven. Wins and losses matter. The championships matter. Crowds are going to be hit, they're going to be on a chance, they're going to know everything, they're going to feel organic with the emotion that they feel towards the performer. That's what NXT does at Full Sail University when they do their shows. That's exactly what ECW was.
They
basically launched ECW, they killed it, destroyed it, threw it away, and then 2 or 3 years later, hey, look at this, now we're going to redo the whole developmental system, which, when I ran developmental, all I got was, hey, here's Florida, here's OVW, this is what we got. There was no... And then once they modified all that, and then Hunter took it over, what he's done with it has been amazing. NXT is literally what AEW should have been.
And basically, so who ran? I know Paul Heyman had a lot to do. I mean, you mentioned Dreamer. I know Paul Heyman had a big influence on it. And then, of course, a lot of people know the big divide between Vince and Paul Heyman was during the December to Dismember pay-per-view. That was the lowest watch pay-per-view in WWE history. And I mean, what really went awry? Because they had, I mean, it was just a thrown together pay-per-view. They did the Extreme Elimination Chamber, but it just wasn't, people just wasn't buying into it. Now, you said that Triple H had a lot, you know, is doing a fantastic job with NXT, and I agree. Do you think that someone like Triple H being NXT is what's causing NXT to soar? Or is this a matter of WWE not allowing people like Dreamer, people like Heyman, and other ECW figures to really be creative like Triple H is?
100%. We just didn't get a chance to do it. There was a ton of guys that were hired over the last several years that I wanted to hire 7 or 8 years ago. Dreamer wanted to hire. Dr. Tom wanted to hire. We wanted to get all these guys. And we couldn't. You know, we were literally told, hey, this is, if someone's not over 5'10", don't send the TV. If someone's not this, if someone's not that. Like, there was parameters set. So then they basically, Hunter runs NXT, and then they arrange for us time to get together. And they're like, wow, look at what's out there. But instead of getting a bunch of guys who maybe don't have the heart and passion for this and starting from scratch, let's take those guys who've been on the indies, your Joes, Bobby Roode, Kevin Steens, all these guys, let's throw them down there. If nothing else, they can work with all these other guys and get them better.
Yeah.
If you throw something that you want to stick, so be it.
Yeah.
There is no way on earth I would have been able to sell sending Finn Balor to TV when I ran developmental. If I sent them there, they would have said, he's too short. We don't want to see him. They wouldn't even get him the chance. And
yeah.
You know, I could be wrong. That's just kind of talented. But it's just to show you, a lot of times are changing. I'm not saying it was bad. That's how it is now.
Yeah.
It's a different problem. Different set of rules. You know, but obviously it's worked for them. They created a niche product that people love, and it's over. So, you know, it's just, but it's different. It's not... I don't know. It's a different scenario, and the ECW thing. This is exactly what ECW should have. This is exactly what ECW was. A proving ground for guys to go there and get over and go to the next level.
Oh, yeah.
The NXT guys are kind of
good. Yeah.
You know, they go there and get over, and then they go to SmackDown Raw. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Another smaller...
I mean, look, there's a lot I want to blame Paul for. I mean, I don't care for... I don't dislike what I call these guys work for. But the December to remember thing, if they're going to sit back and... I mean, that was the eventual quote-unquote straw that blew the back and got rid of Paul after that. But it was abysmal. He couldn't run ECW the way he wanted to. They totally handcuffed him. And they basically used that as an excuse to say, hey, let's get rid of him. And then it was just kind of nonsense. I'm not defending him. But it's just a blame. I've heard so many people say that, oh, Paul wrote a terrible, huh? He can do what he can do.
Right.
ECW has been destroyed at that point.
Yeah.
So they brought it back and they killed it and they got rid of it. So,
yeah.
People are still chanting. I turned on Raw for like 2 seconds last night, and the blonde-haired girl.
Yeah, Alexa Bliss. Yeah, yeah.
Pulled out a Singapore cane from under the ring.
Yep.
And the entire crowd said ECW.
Yep. Yeah, just one. Yeah. Just one hit. Just Alexa Bliss pulled out a Singapore cane. Just one hit on Bayley, and the whole Jersey crowd chants ECW. Yeah, that's you're right.
WCW.
Right. Right.
Right up there with Dreamer, Raven, Sandman, Sabu, anybody as like a legendary ECW icon, so to speak, because everybody knows who the BWO is.
Mm-hmm.
We just did WrestleCon this year. We did WrestleCon for the first time in Orlando. We had one of the longest lines of the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, I tell me and Stevie, how did we put this stuff on for the first time in 1996? 21 years later, we're still putting it on.
Wow, that's incredible.
Say that. You think there's a lot of acts now that 20 years from now, people are going to still care about. There's acts now that people 2 years from now are going to care about.
Oh, right. Very true.
There's guys who get released from WWE or quit WWE, and within 6 months to a year, no one cares about them. They never got over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very true. Another smaller guy was AJ Styles. It still is AJ Styles, and he's definitely been acquired by the WWE and has definitely just blossomed in his just 1 year's time in WWE, almost a year and a half at this point. Is AJ Styles one of the guys that you wanted to recruit? Because there's been stories that, of course, we saw that match with him and Hurricane, and then there were some things that they tried to recruit him, but, you know, there's reports that saying that he... So did he actually... deny it because he wants to stay with his family because they want to bring him to Cincinnati? Is that valid?
No, I was right there for it. I mean, me and AJ, when I left ECW, one of the first times I met him was over in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
We did a tour of World Wrestling All-Stars. You can find it on YouTube. Me versus AJ Styles, World Wrestling All-Stars. We did a tour over there. While I was over there, I had told him that I got signed by WWE, and I had. And they had a tryout camp in Cincinnati, gave way to that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was going to have to go to that. I didn't. I got signed right through it. But in that tour of Cincinnati, he had told me basically, well, after the tour of Australia, we came back, and they had a paper in Vegas. World Wrestling All-Stars in Vegas, they had too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a six-way match in with him and that. And that was the night that Bob Ryder and Jeff Jarrett had come up to me, and they told me that they were launching this new company called TNA, this whole deal. And I said, look, guys, I just thought with WWE, I really want to give this a shot. And, they wanted me to come to TNA. And they were going to bring AJ in and do a cornerstone around him.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's AJ, it's not that AJ never wanted to go to WWE. The offer was never right for AJ to go to WWE.
Mm-hmm.
AJ was treated like a top guy in TNA, rightfully so. He's a fantastic worker. He's a great human being. He's a good dude. He's a good worker. He's a class act. The only thing I hope I'm wrong about with AJ is that he didn't spend his whole, because he's a great year. I hope he has a couple more good years, and then he can go home and sit home with his wife and kids and all that. Because he really put his body through hell and back, so to speak, over the last several years.
Oh, yeah.
Through TNA, through New Japan. So I'm almost kind of hoping that his bump card isn't kind of full, so he can milk this now.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys used to finish their career in WWE with a couple big years. They get out. If they want to do the autograph circuit or something, they do it. But, AJ's close to 40 years old, I think. 38,
39, 40. He has 40, yeah.
He's only got a couple left.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, but I hope whatever he makes, I hope it's twice as much as I think it is. And he deserves every dollar that he gets.
Yeah, I think that's a great assessment. A couple more things. You mentioned some backstage roles that you end up acquiring. You ran OVW. You were in the talent process. How was it having those backstage roles as opposed to being on television?
Doing the ring, and the developmental system was obviously completely different then. But Danny, Jimmy, Rick, all those guys, they knew I had a lot more to offer. Even to this day, I mean, I never named names or talk about guys, but I still talk to so many guys in the industry. And I get a phone call out of the blue from a dozen superstars, from guys who I don't even really know that well, who will ask me like a question, hey man, Nova, you know, I got your number from so-and-so, I just want to go out by you. You can keep training, and I'm like, yeah, man. So, you know, to this day, I always consider myself what I accomplished outside of wrestling, too, like getting 2 degrees and working in banking and finance and not becoming a drunken, broken, beaten-up drug addict.
Yeah.
Which everybody thinks all of us are like Randy Duran. You know, I take a lot of pride in what I accomplished close to wrestling, then even more so than I was in it.
Yeah.
Backstage roles, I think that, you know, you're challenging yourself as a performer. Now, I was always interested in more. Like, whatever's behind the curtain, I'm going to go look. So whether it was helping run workouts before the show in ECW or being the guy in the ring before Raw and SmackDown to work out the new guys, I always try to help the locals. You'll never hear a story ever, ever, of me being rude or not cool to basically any worker I ever met, whoever came around looking for a job, an extra whatever, man. Only guys who I ever had to quote-unquote be within the business usually were a-holes to everybody else. And nobody else likes them either. There's only a few of them. So, but for the most part, I try to be cool with everybody because I had to remind myself, at the end of the day, this is a fake sport run by marks, and we get thrown in the ropes and bounce off. Like, this isn't real.
Yeah.
So, of course it's real, but the business part of it. I love the sport of it. I grew to hate the business part of it. And that was the thing behind the scenes, too. So many broken promises. And just being lies toyed with, just nothing mattering. And just on the turn of a dime, you just watch like somebody's whole career and what they work for just get thrown down the toilet.
Yeah.
The writer couldn't find a role for them or something stupid, and I just sit around and be like, this is insane. And, you know, I love my time in it. My time in the wrestling world has been over for a long time, many years now. I pretty much do a couple appearances a year, a couple shows here and there for promoters that I like, people I get along with. It's a couple hours drive from the house. But, you know, I'm so busy in the real world, I don't, you know, I'll be honest with you, I had a booking, some guy contacted me for a booking in June. Funny story. And I said, okay, it's going to be me, Meanie, and somebody else. So I said, okay, it's a six-man match. It didn't need to be in Indiana. So I said, okay, we'll do it. So then, like, about a week goes by, and I see on the poster that this show's coming up, and Meanie's name ain't on it. And this other person's name is on it, and it's an actual contact. They go, what's going on? Oh, you know, we had to switch the card around, brother. I'm like, well, I already committed to this. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
So he's like, man, so we went back and forth a little bit. He's like, well, if you really need the booking, I said, look, I said, look, brother, I make 6 figures a year in the real world. I'm good. I don't ever need another wrestling booking again in my life. But it was another stark reminder of just how much I dislike 99% of independent wrestling or just nonsense or just, you know, we all just saw the firestorm that happened this week. When a simple tweet went out, and everybody and their grandmother was up in arms about what Randy said, or Rip said, and this guy said, and but indie wrestling can be so dramatic and just so sleazy sometimes it sucks.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought that up, because I was just about to go there as far as just the tweets that came out. Rip Rogers, you know, he is very old school. I love the traditional feel and old school feel of wrestling. He's a very old school wrestling type of guy. He sends out a tweet, and then Randy Orton gets involved, Bully Ray gets involved, Will Ospreay gets involved, Ricochet gets involved. Yeah, CM Punk even made a reference. So there was so much going on, like you said, a firestorm. What is your overall take on just from Rip's point of view and Will Ospreay and Ricochet's point of view and just as far as just the two sides of the spectrum when it comes to indie wrestling. For those who are listening right now, the very short version of it is basically Rip Rogers tweeted basically the logistics of an indie show was handshakes, flips, not selling, and by the end of the show, this is awesome chance and more handshakes and just basically just rips apart just the essence of professional wrestling from a character-driven standpoint. Of course, Will Ospreay and Ricochet, two people who are very known for their indie work. You know, Ricochet did it in a much softer, we'll talk about this later in the show, Ricochet did it in a much softer way as far as he loves wrestling, and then Ospreay kind of bragged about, you know, the money that he makes and things like that. So those are the two opposite ends of the spectrum. Where do you fall on that?
Mm-hmm. As the guy who was coming up with all this cool stuff, and I was ahead of my time. I mean, you'd be surprised how many guys today, in today's wrestling, who you guys would consider the top WWE name, the indie darlings, who have met me or reached out or sent me a message or something and told me I was their favorite guy in ECW, that I was their favorite guy to watch. So I took a lot of pride in that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also was a guy who was a character-driven guy as Simon Dean in WWE, who wrestled a way more conventional style. What I would tell the guys is, look, do what works for you that you thoroughly enjoy doing until somebody who's signing your check tells you not to do that anymore and now you got to do it yourself. So if you want to side, don't jump on somebody, jump on somebody. Go do all the stuff you guys got to do. Get it out of your system. But the drawback, you're not doing this 20 years from now. You're not. You're lucky to do it 5 years. Your body cannot sustain it. It can't sustain the level of flexibility, the endurance, the muscle mass needed. You can't do it. You're not doing that until you're 30. So get out of your system, be full of piss and vinegar, knock yourselves out, take all these amazing bumps, protect each other in the ring. I mean, I was in the gym for almost 25 years. I never hurt anybody. And I did some stuff that could be some pretty risque stuff, pretty wacky. And with the advent now of all this incredible stuff, and all this like strong style stuff, every time I turn around, I hear about another worker whose like career has touched the board, or he's got to retire, or something happens. So something that's totally avoidable.
Uh-huh.
And I see everybody's point of view on it. I'm a Rip guy. I'm a Randy guy. I'm a Bubba guy. I'm all these. I like all these guys. But my only issue I have with it, I was watching a lot of people chime in on it who were burying Randy or were burying Rip. Or maybe Barry and Bud, whatever it is. But I'm saying to myself, I ultimately truly respect. I listen to everybody's opinion. I respect the opinion of people who have earned the right to have that opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but just because I went to medical school, if I went to medical school for 6 months and I get out, I can't go into Johns Hopkins University and tell, you know, if you're a resident there, how to do brain surgery, or this is how you should really do it. This is how I would do it. So, Randy's been a top guy for 15 years, and Rip Rogers is turning a lot of the great guys in the business today. So, I mean, these guys who are coming out pro or con, when they speak, you want to listen. And I'm seeing a bunch of guys who are literally, I don't even know who they are, and I keep my ear to the grindstone. I have no idea who half these guys are that I saw chiming in on stuff. I respect Loki's position on it. I respect Bubba's, a lot of these guys. Anybody who's really done anything of merit and has earned an opinion, I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the other ones, I'm like, huh? I'm like, I don't even know who this guy is. So, you know, ultimately it comes down to what you want to do. Make your money, make your friends, be safe, have a good time with it, but you also have to learn how to adapt.
Yeah.
Because if I had went to WWE and only wanted to do all my Nova stuff there, and wasn't adapt to learning how to wrestle a better style. And I will say this. When I watch a lot of independent wrestling on YouTube or somebody guys send me clips or some of the smaller wrestling companies, you know, syndicated shows on TV, when I watch those matches, Chris, I honestly cannot tell you what the first match is or what the main event is. And fundamentally, there's an issue with that.
Absolutely.
If the first match of the night is going out there And there is a pattern in a lot of matches today because the boys see it, they think the crowd's clapping for it, the promoters are booking it, so then they have to go kind of do the same thing if they want to get clapped and they want to get booked. Well, that's what these guys do. But there is definitely a repetitious pattern of how a lot of these matches go. It's like, you know, put this take down here, insert dive here, do this, do this super kick out. I mean, I've seen some of these shows where, like, the first match is, like, 18 minutes long, and these guys are kicking out at 2 and 3 seconds. Like, this is nuts. Like, who is sitting in the back? That's the biggest thing I've missing from a lot of shows. From the independent shows to, like, you know, sometimes I've seen, like, a Ring of Honor TV show a couple times, some other ones. I don't know who's sitting around and masterminding and putting not just the matches together, but the show. So, like, if there's some agents for the show, like, they got to sit around. And, like, you know, let's say Daniel is an agent. Hey, Daniel, what are you guys doing in the first match, man? They got 11 minutes. Like, what's the last couple minutes of that match look like? Or, like, you know, Frank was an agent. Hey, Frank, what are these guys doing? Like, you kind of got to go over that all to me. Just to, like, you know, you have to wrestle your place on the card, too. I'm sorry, but you do. And it's just one of some of these matches I see, I'm like, dude, just wait a minute. This is the first match of the night, huh? And I see it on Independence, too. And there's nothing, I know I'm long-winded on this, but there's nothing more revolting to me than watching two, I think, Carnies, D-Z-Z-Z-Eyes, out in the ring, trying to go 16 or 17 minutes of a match. That's the second or third match in the show, and it's literally unwatchable, borderline untrained. And they could have had a much better 6-minute match, maybe. And then they come in the back and they talk about how great it was. And I'm looking around saying, could somebody give me some acid? Can one of these guys from, like, Iran throw an acid attack in my eyes right now, please? So I can cut it out of that. I mean,
yeah.
It's amazing for me. It's just, these guys, but they don't know any better. Even the so-called vet, brother. I've been in the business 25 years, brother. You know, well, how many matches you had in that time? 9? That's impossible. I mean, I don't know. It's just one of those things where I just shake my head. There's not enough teachers left. There's way too many guys who are vet, brother, and they're just awful. And, they, you know, I hate to say it. That's why I tell them that, like, you know, you never made it
because
you're not good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you brought a really good point as far as just the shorter matches. A 16-minute match versus a much simpler 6-minute match that would be much more memorable. Someone who I just highly respect in the business is Jim Ross, and I had the opportunity to go to a Q&A session with him and ask a couple questions, and you know, one of the things that he highly emphasizes all the time is just the product just needs to be shorter. You know, there's so much more memorable opportunities when stuff is just shorter, and stuff just goes on so long nowadays that it just takes really the memorable factor away from something. If it's just too long and people just get not interested.
That a lot of these guys are stepping in the ring.
Yeah, it's true.
That's the difficult thing. They don't go train. They don't go to training school. They don't bump. They get in the ring, brother, because the guys from work or the warehouse or their family get to come and see them. It's great. But then they got to go 16, 17 minutes. And some of the people talk for it and they think it's good. It's like if they've only eaten bologna for so long, if you stick a piece of bologna in their mouth, they're going to love it. These
true.
People have only ever had bologna. Like, these fans have been conditioned to see what's really good. So, again, like, every now and then, I know this sounds staggering, but every now and then when I go to a show, I'll actually have a talent come up to me and say, hey, Nova, can you listen to our match? If I did 100 indie shows in the past 5 years, I don't even think I did that many, but if I did 100, maybe 2 times out of that 100, people have actually come up to me and either asked me for advice or say, hey, can you watch our show? Can you watch our match? No one ever does. Nobody goes up to anybody in locker rooms anymore. I was on a show a couple weeks ago. The promoter's a great guy, decent event overall, and I just saw one collection of guys after another sitting there and yapping and yapping and yapping and putting together these dreadful matches that I'm watching in the back, and I'm saying, this is unbelievable. And the guys that were the worst in the ring were the guys that were quote-unquote veterans that just could not shut up the entire time, just kept talking and talking and talking. And the other knuckleheads would agree into it. And I'm looking around saying, this, I can't even enjoy this. And it's just one of those things where I would, me and Conway, Rob Conway, I did some shows with him, and we would always laugh. You know, me and Rob and Al Snow were on a show about a couple months ago, and we're sitting lost in the three of us. I don't think one person came over and asked a single thing about their match, about what they should do or anything. I'm sitting around looking at this. Al's been doing this 30, almost like over 30 years. Me and Rob have been doing it 20-something each. We have over 100 years of wrestling between the three of us. We've literally wrestled every single human being in the business over the past 30 or 40 years between the three of us. And we've all had different roles in the business. How is not one person coming over here right now and even asking us the most simplest of ideas?
Wow.
But they don't. So they all got to figure it out. And I'm good with that. I'm only 36. I get paid the same whether I go there and talk to anybody or do. I'm like, you know, I try to. I know it's crazy. Secret. I'm one of the only guys when I go to the independent shows. I actually watch every single match. The other talents on the show don't even watch matches. I watch matches. I watch the finishes. Every now and then somebody will stumble in the back and say, "Hey, Nova, what'd you see?" And I'll tell them and I'll give them an idea. They're not really receptive to it. All they want to hear is what they did well. And I'll tell them like five things that went wrong and they'll say, "Yeah, well, how does that dropkick look?" And I'm like,
right.
And it's amazing to me also, this is my number one pet peeve on wrestling show. I honestly don't care what you have to do off the show. Let me just throw this there. I do not care. When somebody leaves the wrestling show, and that's all the rage you see. Again, if I'm using 100 shows over the past 5 years. I don't think I've been to one show where by the time the semi-main event or the main event was ready to go on, the entire locker room was gone. Everybody was gone. Know who usually goes on last? The main. The main event guy. And my motto was always, if you want to be a main event guy, watch the main event guy.
Yeah.
I was at a show last week. This kid went on the first match of the night. He walked to the back. It was 7:15 at night. Literally 7:15. He walks in the back, and this kid lived like maybe an hour from the show. I was 3 hours away. He walks up to me, get all his gear on. I say, "Hey, man, what's going on?" He goes, "Ah, you know, I'm split." And I go, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, I got to work tomorrow." I go, "Tomorrow morning?" He goes, "Yeah." I go, "Tomorrow morning, like a.m., like when the sun sets?" He goes, "Yeah." I go, "What time?" He goes, "I don't know, 8 o'clock or something. I try to get up really early." But I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I'm looking at my watch, and I'm looking at him like, "What?" And it's just one of those things that's just so mind-boggling.
Wow.
The young generation of wrestlers, you know, again, I don't want to be that guy. Because I'm 44 years old. I've been doing this for 25 years. I don't feel myself a veteran or a final guy, but I've been around a long time. I've been a lot of places. But, like, you'd be surprised if some of the younger dudes, nobody offers a chair in the locker room anymore. Nobody really shakes hands when they go in the locker room anymore. Nobody stays to watch the whole show. Nobody gives any advice. It's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
And it's just more of, I'm out of place. I'm the dinosaur. Trust me. This is not my, I said this in the beginning of the interview, Chris. This isn't my business anymore. Stop. I've been at it for a long time. So these guys who are the guardians of it now, treat it well. Guess what? 5, 3, 5, 10 years from now, you guys are going to be the ones.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of looking back and saying, "Oh man, you know, I was way better back then." So, yep.
Wow. Yeah. That is such very, very interesting information is shared, and I've heard many of those things before, and I, you know, it's great that you confirmed that, because I have a lot of friends in the business in WWE, TNA, or Impact Wrestling now, and ROH, that is shared stories, and I have a lot of people. Actually, a good friend of mine has his own indie show that's an NWA legend, and yeah, I've heard many, many things like that. And it's, you know, someone who's actually been at shows like yourself and actually saw those instances, it's mind-boggling, like you said. So where can the listeners find, I like to call you Big Money Mike now, because you're past wrestling, you're in banking, you know, you're in finance, and you're Big Money Mike Bucci now. That's the best gimmick you've ever had.
I try, man. A lot of whole different things. It's always been interesting to me. If you don't have a plan for post-life wrestling, there's only a few guys who are ever going to make money by just being themselves after they're done in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of you guys, I hate to break it to you, you're going to have to find something else to do. So if you think you're going to slub around for the next 10 or 15 years making money off your quote-unquote TV name, I got news for you. Ain't going to happen.
Nope.
There's a select few that can do it. The Hardys still make money off their name. Hurricane's still out there. A couple other guys, but for the majority of them, they're not. Once they get released from WWE, within 2 years, they're not even making a third what they were making when they got released, and no one really cares about them anymore. So that's the hard reality of today's business. So for me, they can hit me up on Facebook. Mike Bucci is my real name. I don't do Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, any of that stuff. That's not my thing. I'm a pretty low-key dude, man. Like, that's why this is great. You asked me several times to do this, I think, in the past, and we could never connect, but through your persistence, I said, okay, let's do this. But I really don't do a lot of these anymore. I talk to some of the guys from one or two other websites, really, just to shoot the breeze because they're my friends in real life.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I mean, I hate to say it, I just don't care anymore, Chris. I wouldn't care if pro wrestling ever ran another show again. It sucks for some of my friends who lose their jobs, but wrestling hasn't put real money in my pocket in 10 years. So I worry about 19 other things every single day. First of all, my 7-year-old daughter, and then after that, I worry about everything else. And wrestling's not even... I worry about what movies my Dallas Cowboys are making in this offseason.
Oh, the Cowboys. Ugh.
I worry about how the
Cowboys
are going to wind up this
season. Okay. I'm cool with that. Yeah.
I worry about a million other things.
Yeah.
I don't care about it.
Yeah.
Here's what it is. It's never going to go away. It's been around forever. It's going to be around. It's going to constantly evolve.
Yeah.
And I just hope that the guys of today, they leave it in a better condition than if they found it in. And, you know, have fun with it, guys. Because eventually, people will stop asking for your autograph, and you will have to become a real person.
Uh-oh.
In the real world.
Yeah.
Most people fear that.
Yeah. Very sound advice, Mike. Mike Bucci, Simon Dean, Nova, BWO. It's been a pleasure, sir. I really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you, brother.
Have a good night.
Bye, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Goodbye.
Mike Bucci, Simon Dean, Nova. He's in financing now. He's been in banking and financing for a while. He said he makes 6 figures a year. So I like to call him Big Money Mike Bucci. So if he ever decides to come back to professional wrestling, that is going to be his name. I have coined it, and there's nothing he can do about it. He's Big Money Mike Bucci. All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get into the show. Go home show of Backlash, of course. Follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter, Facebook at Crave Wrestling. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's bring in the co-host with the most, none other, Under the Mat Radio, Evan Tech Trout. How are you tonight, sir?
Hey, doing good. How you feeling, man?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I'm ready to talk some professional wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sports entertainment.
So some professional sports entertainment. Yes, at the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah.
It's not Camping World Stadium. It's not wrestling. It's sports entertainment at the Citrus Bowl. That's the PC way to say it, according to the WWE. But according to the Pancakes Power Slam show, it's wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. Adam Cole, baby! Is he going to NXT TakeOver Chicago, which is this Saturday night, headlined by Hideo Itami, trying to get the NXT championship from Bobby Roode. So here's the thing. He was kicked out of the Bullet Club last weekend at the War of the Worlds pay-per-view.
Yep.
Kenny Omega went on the... on the screen, with they did kind of like a curtain call with the Young Bucks. The lights go out. Kenny Omega goes on the screen, cuts an interview. I actually transcribed the interview on Daily DDT. I wrote an article about it. Well, the promo rather. I transcribed his promo. If you want to check out what he said, and he basically said, you know, in a fairy tale, there's a hero, there's a villain. Marty Scurll's next to him. And then they go lights out again. Marty Skrull is in the ring, pulls out a Umbrella Bullet Club logo, super kick by the Young Bucks, and Adam Cole, baby, is out of the Bullet Club. But at the same time, you know, there's been tapings. One of the tapings, he went against Marty Skrull in a dark match that is on the video on demand. However, he was on one taping as far as the television, I believe, and he wasn't in any of the weeks following that. But he did just enter the big IECW tournament that goes on every year. However, so did Drew Galloway. After he had some dates, I mean, the Hardy Boys as well, they had some dates after they joined the WWE. So this could be the same for Adam Cole. I mean, there's a chance that we may see him come Saturday. Right now, there's only really four matches being promoted. You have, of course, like I said, the NXT Championship match between Hideo Itami and Bobby Roode. You have a tag team match between the Authors of Pain and DIY, the ladder match. You have the UK Championship between Pete Dunne and Tyler Bates. And you have the Women's Championship, Asuka, Ruby Red, and Nikki Cross. So, really, 4 hours, right? You know, usually about two and a half hours. But what they promote the takeover events, usually 2.5 to 3 hours or so. So four matches and all that time. So I'm sure there's going to be some surprises.
Yeah, I mean, you look at how things are broken down. Adam Cole gets kicked out the Bullet Club. Marty Skrull's in it. And, you know, it's been rumored since the beginning of the year of Adam Cole going to WWE. I do know that he has been at the Performance Center a few times, so this is the writing on the wall. I mean, we could see, just like, to your credit, whether you were the last one to get an official interview with Drew Galloway, and next thing you know, he downloads the NXT. So now you got Adam Cole. You know, he gets out the Bullet Club, out the Blue, and it's just up. We've been watching wrestling for, I don't know how long, since the 80s. We've been covering this for 4 or 5 plus years. We know how things work, and I'd like to see maybe Adam Cole do a surprise show up at NXT Chicago, even if he doesn't watch it. He show up, maybe he'll be sitting ringside with Drew Galloway, or maybe he could just come out, maybe like Priscilla did. So we'll just have to see if they're not on the board. I mean, what else is Adam Cole going to do in ROH? You know, he's been champ, he's done everything, he's wrestled just about everywhere. So why not go to NXT? And WWE really could use that. They really could use that new star power. Now, I guess you would say second or third generation run of NXT.
Yeah, absolutely. He's even said in interviews before that he wants to go to NXT first. You know, he was never... He didn't make it clear where he was going to go, but he said that if he did go to WWE, he would go to NXT because he just likes the feel, which makes sense too. I mean, he would be more of a star in NXT than, you know, the WWE, you know, as far as the main roster is concerned. So, you know, I think it'd be a really, really good idea, man. They'll probably bring him in as a heel because right now you have like Hideo Itami, you have Roderick Strong, you have Chris Hero. So they're pretty decent on the babyface side. I think Adam Cole, you know, if the only thing about people like Adam Cole is this, I despise like the super cool heels that get cheered anyway, you know, and it's like, either do something like it becomes a bigger challenge for him, but he has to, you know, if he's booked as a heel, that's the challenge for him because he's like, he has to challenge himself to say, okay, if I'm booked as a heel, I'm going to have to try to tweak, you know, my character for people to actually boo me. You know, and with
that's the thing.
That's the one I love ROH, but that's one of the biggest criticisms that, you know, people who casually watch ROH, you know, they say that there's not a lot of storylines. You know, I mean, there's storylines, but their characters aren't really distinguished.
The storylines of wrestlers. It doesn't have the big over the top characters with like WWE does. It's not character driven. You know, if I was WWE, if I was like a Lucha Underground, or each is more so old school wrestling with storylines, like I was in the '80s and seventies.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that character element is one of the things that hurts ROH. With Adam Cole, you know, he has a character, but not really. You know, he just has, you know, he just puts, you know, two fingers up a piece and say, Adam Cole, baby, and that's really it. You know, and so it's if he's going to get cheered, bring him in as a babyface. You know, perhaps he can kind of side with someone like Roderick Strong or something, and maybe turn on him. Ty Dillinger is gone now, so. And speaking of Ty Dillinger, where in the world has he been? But
if I'm right, he's they just announced he's supposed to be wrestling the pre. Is it the pre-match? Yeah, pre-show backlash against Aiden English.
Aiden English, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Aiden English. Again, and he's beat him twice already. So that's just weird. But, yeah, and it's like you called Ty Dillinger up. He's been waiting all this time. And what happens? He's on the pre-show already. So that really doesn't bode well for some of them other people. But you know, Adam Cole, you know, right now, and you know, Sanity doesn't really have a big feud. So I think that you know, perhaps Adam Cole and Chris Hero and Roderick Strong or something like that could go against Sanity and Adam Cole.
Help them out.
They can lose to Sanity. You know, it could be one of those things where. Somehow they can in a six-man match. It could be Chris Hero, Roderick Strong, and debuting Adam Cole against Sanity, and they can go against each other again at the tapings. And then they, you know, somehow Sanity defeats the three, and that gives Cole a way to turn on, you know, both of them. And so there you go. I mean, there's the storyline right there, and I think it'll work out really well to see Cole there. Hopefully he can really hone on his character a little bit more.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff with him. Maybe he needs that. He just needs that. He's champion. He's done a lot. Now he's in WWE, so it's kind of like starting off fresh again. I mean, he has the name value, which helps. We may not really need to change much so much, but he has to reintroduce himself to the WWE universe, because sadly there are people who don't know who he is. They don't watch anything outside of WWE. So
very true. Yep. Very true. Speaking of outside of WWE, New Japan debuts their IWGP United States Championship. They're going to have a tournament in Long Beach. So they're really bringing, you know, their craft. You know, they've partnered with ROH for a while now, partnered with NWA for a little bit as well. So they've had a U.S. presence for a few years now, at least. I mean, it's been a while, but you know, they're actually really marketing themselves more in the American market as far as a distinct promotion. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of New Japan, huge fan of New Japan, and the belt looks odd. It looks weird. It looks big and
bulky.
It looks
creepy. It's huge. It's like this belt's so big.
And it's weird, too, because I'm a huge fan of their world title and their Intercontinental Championship. And I like their junior championship as well. And I love their belt designs, but this one is a miss for me. But, you know, it's they're bringing it to the States, and I think it's a great idea. Jay Lethal already, you know, put his hat in. Hangman Page, I believe, put his hat in as well. So it should be a very, very good tournament. I can see someone like Cody winning. I think it'll be good, and I'm looking forward to it, and I really think IWGP really planting themselves a little more in the States is really going to help them as a company. And hey, you know, they've been around for, you know, over 40 years now, and making more of a presence in the States, they may get some fire under WWE to realize that not everybody on their roster could be, you know, it's one of those things. I think I forgot who I was talking with, maybe Baron Dax or Eugene or week before that, whoever it was. But we were talking about just having co-host, my buddy Travis Taylor.
Travis,
we were talking about just the NWA when he bought the NWA, and we were talking about just the competition that it could bring to WWE, you know, and just because WWE hasn't had a sense of competition since the Monday Night Wars. Yeah, TNA, you know, went to Mondays for a hiccup. Yeah, you know, ROH, they've never been in the competition. Great, you know, I love ROH as far as an in-ring product, but they've never been close to any competition. Lucha Underground, of course, they're not close as well. So they haven't had that type of competitive edge to them since the Monday Night Wars. So with IWGP, that is very prestigious, they may have a competitive edge with them again, and they may have some people who feel a little bit more relieved that IWGP is coming, you know, to the States. And who knows? They you know, people like Jack Swagger, who I've said many times would be phenomenal in New Japan. And, you know, some names there now can possibly be looking for greener pastures.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I definitely do agree with you on that. You mentioned about Billy Corgan. I hope it'd be competition, but it's figure out, okay, what are you going to do that's different that Anthem of Impact with TNA and ROH and Lucha Underground and WWE? What are you going to do different from them?
Right.
So it's, but I mean, don't forget Global Force, which I called last year, and even said, "Hey, you know, the Jarrett is waiting to get back in TNA so we can merge it." Yeah.
Who?
Remember Global Force? Global Force, right? Yeah, right.
They merged with Impact Wrestling now, so
yeah,
the OWL. So you, it's just so weird. You know, you got GWF that merged with Impact. And now, I mean, here's the thing. I'm a big fan of giving credit where credit's due. Now, with Impact Wrestling as a product, it's not as bad as people critique it to be. People are just so big on the fact that Impact Wrestling is kind of like damaged goods, which I totally agree with all the legal stuff, with all the people fronting the money. It's just so bad as a product. As far as from a financial standpoint, now Anthem purchasing them, you know, helped them and kind of refueled them. It's not a bad product. I mean, there's a lot of good talent there. I'm a big fan of Eli Drake. I've had him on my show before. You know, David Richards with his heel turn. I've had him on my show before. You know, Eddie Edwards is a good hand. Of course, you know, EC3. I've never been sold on EC3. I've never just.
He has a real square jaw.
Yeah,
like the Tick.
Yeah, I've never been sold on him. I mean, you know, I think that's, you know, the fans, he's over, but I just, personally, I've never been sold on him. Of course, James Storm's a vet in the business. He's a great hand. So they have the talent, and it's just, you know, but they're bringing in people like Congo Kong, and just it just makes it seem a little bit more. It just makes it seem a little bush league. I mean, it just really does. I don't think the product as a whole. I think a lot of people critique the product without really spending time watching it every week like I do. I still have it on my DVR. I still watch the product weekly. And so I think I can make an accurate judgment based on someone who actually, you know, watches the product, you know, every week, as opposed to say, oh, Impact Wrestling and TNA, you guys are terrible. And they probably haven't watched the product in 6 months at least since the Hardys, you know, been there. So I think in all fairness, if you're going to critique the product, you know, and spend some time watching it to know what you're critiquing. But I just think from a personal standpoint, I don't know what Impact needs to do. I really don't think it's anything nowadays.
It's like Teflon.
Yeah.
You think it's dead? It didn't have more than 9 lives. It's Teflon. It bounces back. It doesn't
It's funny
die.
Because I said that to Al Snow. I mentioned the whole 9 lives thing when I had Al Snow on the show. And he was like, yeah, good. I agree that they're having 9 lives because there needs to be some type of competition. But it's just like, you know, it's one of those things like there's a difference between having 9 lives like a cat and just being like a zombie. You know what I mean? Like, what was that old video game? It was probably about 20 years ago. What was it called? It was a zombie game.
Resident Evil.
Resident Evil. That's it right there. Yeah. I was going to say they had the character called the Licker.
The Licker.
That was just kind of like really huge and would just, like, go for your torso. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's how TNA is to me. You know, it's like you'll keep shooting them down, and they'll come back, but they'll still kind of be like, they'll be more limp than they were before. You know what I mean? Like, it just, that's what Impact just seems like to me.
So like T-1000 from Terminator.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's like, I like, you know, I'm not the type of person that wants those people from TNA to lose their jobs, because, you know, that's what they love to do. They're passionate about the business. They love professional wrestling, and they should have a job. But I'm hoping for the best, but I'm that type of guy when it comes to Impact that I'm just like, man, you know, I just, there's really no direction, you know, from a positive.
It has to be the right direction. The talent is good because most of the talent that was a part of, you know, the original generation or the alumni is now on WWE and went on to do good work in Japan. It's just the direction. It's just the money flow. It was Jarrett helped out, and it was, you know, the original infusion of Jarrett and Dutchie and Terry Taylor and Russo, and then people complained about that. And they left, and it was Hogan and Friends and Bischoff, and they complained about that. And then Dixie Carter came in, Austin will be great, and they complained about that. And now Billy Corgan came in, they complained about that. No matter what they've done, I mean, you know, some strides and some highs and lows still have been able to go over that hump.
Yeah. And it just goes to show, like you said, just that revolving door of leadership, you know, it's inconsistent. Now you have the OWL of Anthem running things.
And the Iowa Anthem, totally known as Impact.
Oh,
but if they ever cross the line.
OWL. Yeah. All right, real quick. Big Cass revealed. I thought it was a very interesting story. I wrote this on the Inquisitor. Big Cass, on the recent episode 24, he revealed that he was nearly fired from the WWE, and he actually had someone backstage, one of the agents, tell him that the only reason why he's still there is that he's seven feet tall. So, you know, that's not really motivating to me, because, but at the same time, you know, thank God that Big Cass was able to really bounce back and get in a really good position. But just keeping someone for their height definitely does not sound like it is, does not seem like a surprise to me at all.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I apologize for that. Sorry. I hit the mute button. Yeah, I agree with that. It's just, and I always say this, Big Cass, I like him always attribute his own cast to kind of New Age Outlaws, Road Dogg had the mouth, Big, which Enzo has, Enzo in the ring is whatever. But Road Dogg could work. You know, this is Road Dogg could work. He just didn't have to work because he was the talking guy more. Willie Gunn was more the workhorse in the ring. Didn't really talk much. And that's how Big Cass is. And I like Big Cass. He, you know, he talks a little weird, but that's maybe it's the New York, New Jersey thing.
Yeah.
I just have a big, I just have my own peeves of big men. When you're past 6'7", 6'8", when you're a big man, you have to do these same generic moves, choke slam, big boot, power bomb, power slam. It's like, come on, like, can we do other moves? Now, don't do no hip tosses, you know, arm drags like Ricky Steamboat, but you know, use a different move. Just get you over 7 feet tall, and you got to do a big boot. You got to do a choke slam, you know. And I like Big Cass. I think in the ring, he's a lot better than Enzo, but, hopefully
he
reaches over the hump.
Yeah. All right, let's get into this indie wrestling war. So last week, we didn't get to cover this, but last week JBL, he ripped indie wrestling on the episode of Bring It to the Table. And so Rip Rogers, I mean, he said that, you know, people should have more. Well, JBL said people should have more opportunities, but you can't wear a medal if you say you've been wrestling for 15 years and you never stepped to the big league. So that was his angle. Rip Rogers sent this long tweet. Rip Rogers, you've had him on your show, if I'm not mistaken.
That's my man, good old Ricky. I didn't hear Rip multiple times.
So he starts off with the tweet talking about, I mean, he's 63 years old. He's old school, you know, and I love the traditional wrestling type of feel that Rip Rogers just really keeps. And he's real adamant about that. He's just a big fan of old school, just the old school feel, not necessarily just the, you know, 3-minute headlocks, but just that kayfabe, just that character driven feel to it. And I respect and I agree with it. So, you know, he you know, tweets a lot as far as just elements that, you know, the wrestling business has lost. The wrestling business have lost it, you know, within just the evolution of just this indie wrestling craze. So, like I explained during the interview with Simon Dean, you had Bully Ray, you had Randy Orton, you had Will Ospreay, you had Ricochet, and even CM Punk saying something about reacting to Ricochet's tweet. So, you know, indie wrestling. And I've mentioned indie wrestling for the second time. I'm not going to say too much about it, but there was a big controversy a year ago. I think it was May of last year. That big old match between Will Ospreay and Ricochet that got a whole lot of talk. I mean, I watched it.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was a great match just from an artistic in-ring competitive standpoint.
Artistic,
but here's what I always say. This is my angle here. I don't think, and you know, Simon Dean, Mike Bucci said this, and I agree with him totally. You know, you can't, if I'm going to a show and I see the same type of match, you know, from start to end, I'm not intrigued. I can't tell what the main event is. Like the main event should always be distinguished from the rest of the card. No matter what sport it is, you know that if it's Ronda Rousey, you know, versus Misha Tate, or Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm or Amanda Nunes, you know that this is going to be the biggest attraction of the night. When it was Brock Lesnar against Mark Hunt, this is it. This is the big attraction for tonight. And the undercard, yeah, the undercard should always be to get people excited about.
Excited, right.
Always.
Get it loaded up.
So, exactly. So if you want to throw in the Ospreay Ricochet match within that card, that, see, if it's within the card before the main event, and I watch a match like Ricochet and Ospreay, I'm getting even more excited about the main event because I'm excited about the show, and it's pumping up the main event. Now the main event should already have its own type of. You know what I mean?
Main event sells the tickets, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It should already have its own type of feel to it. Like, you know, that's separate from everything. Like when it was Hogan Andre, we wanted to see the undercard, but Hogan Andre was just separate from everything else. It was like Hogan Andre is the marquee match, the angle, the story, everything. We wanted to see it culminate at WrestleMania 3. Now, all the undercard matches were important as well, especially with, you know, Savage and Steamboat. They had a really good story going into there as well. But at the same time, all of that should excite the audience for the main event. Nowadays, there's not a big distinction. I mean, you'll have, like, this Rollins versus Owens at the end of the card.
Yeah,
and it's like you'll have Rollins versus Owens at the end of the card, but at the same time you'll have Ziggler versus Sami Zayn, within the middle of the card, and the two matches look eerily similar. I mean, they're almost exactly from the same book. You know, and there's no distinction between those two matches. Problem that I see nowadays with professional wrestling, because there's nothing distinct from the main event and the mid card.
Yeah, it's true. You made the point. Think about it. You see Rollins against Owens, the main event. Well, they easily could have started off the show. Then you have Zayn. Sami Zayn against AJ Styles. I know I'm mixing brands, but you get what I mean. The Kalisto,
yeah.
or as we saw, you know, Finn against Roman. You watch the Raw, you have Finn against Roman. You have Rollins against KO. Well, I'm sorry, Rollins against Bray Wyatt.
Mm-hmm.
Easily, Reigns Balor easily could have made a better Raw. The matches easily could have swapped. Still with me, this is good. And like I said, the main event matches now doesn't have that, unless it's a Brock Goldberg, and people can crap on that all you want, but unless it's a Brock Goldberg, like it was Reigns Taker, like Starrcade 97, Hogan and Sting was it, you just knew that was it. It wasn't, you know, Hogan and Warrior, that was it. You know, Flair and Steamboat. And like you said, the main event matches, you know, Cena Jibble, but you get what I mean, Cena Triple H,
yeah.
Or Cena Michaels, or Yes, Cena Brock. You knew that match was the main event. It wasn't going on. You couldn't swap it on any other part of the card, because if you put it in the middle of the card after that match, everybody was going home.
Yeah.
But now you have the type of workers that we have, and everybody's smaller and everybody's faster. It's like you said, you can eat it. That's a good point. It's swap. It's like, you know,
yeah.
It's like, say, well, well, you know, Reigns and Owens could main event, but then Balor and Bray.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the problem they have with the characters. I mean, any match on Raw and SmackDown, like we saw it on SmackDown, we'll just mend the review with this conversation. We saw it on SmackDown. AJ and Jinder could have main evented. you know, in place of Orton and Corbin. You know, and it's like there's, and it's sad too, because I really, really like Baron Corbin. They have a lot in Baron Corbin, but they're just sabotaging, you know, his character as far as a booking standpoint, because he has the ability to be one of the top heels on the brand. But it's like their character isn't distinguished enough at all that they can interchange, you know, like throughout. There's no way that you can put The Rock at in the middle of the card. You know, there's no way, you know, that you can put Austin in the middle of the card unless there's, you know, some other
Hogan
big match. You know, and it's like the Attitude Era had enough larger than life characters to, even though Austin was in the middle of the card, there was someone still huge, you know, like The Rock or Mankind, The Taker or something like that. But nowadays, they don't have those type of characters that
they don't have anyone
can swap. You know what I mean? So that's that. There's not someone at the end. There's not someone who's so big that this is the main event spot. This is, you know, this person is going to main event. And, you know, and it's going to make and is distinguished from the rest of the people.
You got to think, you mentioned Austin. When wasn't Austin main event in WrestleMania?
Right.
When one of the few people when Austin was the main event in WrestleMania, it was Hogan.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, Austin had to fight Hall. You had Hogan and The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
You had Triple H and Jericho. You know, the year before that, also the last match, you had Hogan and Vince,
yep.
Brock and Angle. So,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of the same thing of, like you said, it is when you have the Attitude Era, even the Era pre, WCW and WWE, and everybody keeps forgetting about WCW, the Attitude Era, right? WCW had big names, too.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of people, Hogan, Savage, Flair, Sting, Goldberg, you know, Nash, got to add Sid, I guess. you know, in WWF, you had whole, you know, Rock, Austin, Triple H, Taker, Mankind. Those names were nothing but main events.
Mm-hmm.
No one else was going to main event but them.
Yep, absolutely. Real quick, what's your take on Goldust turning heel?
So much of a waste of time. And it's just, no one cares. It's not going soft, and Dustin is a good guy. I always love talking to Dustin. And you know, R-Truth, Ron Killings, who has to be almost pushing 50, which he looks, you know, still doing well. No one cared. As I told you off air, I just got in my house. And, you know, first thing I saw was Finn and Reigns.
Yeah.
I put my phone, you know, I looked up. Next thing I see is Goldust, Molly Rocky, all Chief. I'm like, what in the world?
Yeah.
And nobody reacted.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And it's not Goldust.
There's a few
fault.
Marks that said, thank you, Goldust, but that was really it.
And he did it because it was so quiet, and then that chant would get over, and it's not Goldust's fault at all. It's not all true. It's mainly because when was the last time we seen the Golden Truth? If they were on TV on a regular basis, if they actually invested time and they was actually putting them over or actually investing time and storyline in them like he did Goldust and Booker T, you know, Goldust and you know, his other tag team partners, then okay, we care. We cared about Owens and Jericho while he was on TV every week. They actually built that up. We cared, you know, Goldust and Booker T, or when Kane and RVD broke up, it made sense because he was on TV every week. Goldust and R-Truth was on TV for 2 weeks. It disappeared for like 2-3 months. Then he popped up again. It disappeared for 2 weeks. Then he popped up again for 3 straight weeks. And that was the turn. No one cared because they had no time to invest in it. It was like, okay, so what?
Yeah,
I don't understand why R-Truth.
This reminds me of when the primetime players split. You know, it was like, okay. You know, it was just like there was really nothing with it. You know, like, first of all, people were thinking like, okay, this is stupid because the tag team division needs tag teams. So when they split up, they feuded. No one cared about the feud. And then eventually they got back together, split up again, and they feuded again, and no one cared about that either. So it's like, you know, the only solace in this to me is that, you know, R-Truth could have, could, you know, they could probably, they're probably, you know, drag this over to Extreme Rules, you know, and they're trying, because with these rosters, you know, they're just trying to fill spots. You know, they're just really trying. You have to stretch the Raw and SmackDown brands separately for 3 hours apiece. So it's like, we're really grasping for straws of how to book this, you know, this card. So let's just have the Golden Truth break up. Put them in some type of Extreme Rules, you know, extreme match of some sort. Bring back the street fight that he had with Piper, you know. just some type of match that'll be a gimmick match. There's no payoff though. You know, whether R-Truth or Goldust wins, there's still no payoff because neither one of them are going to move up the card because they beat the other person. Neither one of them are going to do that. So it's sad. It's you know, it's one of those things that I'd rather for them to stay the Golden Truth and kind of win a couple of tag team matches than to really break off. And at least they had something with the Golden Truth. At least there was a gimmick with that. But now since they're separate, both of them as singles wrestlers right now are just going to be on main event every week again.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the flavor of the week. Here we go.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, so this is going to be fun. We are going to talk this week about the top five worst factions since the 2000. So, what is your number five?
VKM, Voodoo Kim Mafia.
Oh, man. The New Age Outlaws. And R-Truth, yeah. Ron the Truth Killings. But yeah, VKM, that's a good one. Social Outcast for me, number five. The writing was on the wall for me.
Yeah.
As far as this, when they put them together, they were just outcasts, you know. And basically what happened was they just did a terrible job with even making them relevant, you know. So sadly, but it's certainly one of those things that just really didn't work out. So that's unfortunately. But yeah, it was just the Voodoo Kim Mafia was just Road Dogg and Kip James. B.G. James.
B.G. James, yeah.
Yeah. The Outlaw.
Outlaw.
Yeah, Kip. His real name was like Kip Sop or something like that. And just terrible. But, all right, so what is your number four?
Number four, get ready for this. The Band. Oh, the music was so bad. It was like NWO. That was less than Hollywood stable. Like, that made Virgil, Horace Hogan, shout out to Steve Ray, my man. That made them seem like, hey, this was Nash and Hall, X-Pac, and this is like come with
it. Didn't they put Eric Young in there too?
Eric Young was in
it.
Like,
was
he like
weird?
Was he like the disco version? The disco version? Trying to get to the Wolfpack or to go that's trying to get to the NWO and this was oh man.
Yeah, that was really bad. Number four for me was the Menagerie, TNA, since we want to stay in TNA.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, the Menagerie. That gimmick was just terrible. Nux and Rebel and Crazy Steve, and they had Rob Terry just be some type of, you know, circus freak. And that was a terrible, terrible faction. Just nothing with it. That's really it. I mean, just they came out and had some type of circus name, and that was it. So there was no direction with them. Number three.
You ready for this one? X Factor.
Yes, they were terrible.
Just incredible. X-Pac, Albert. Yeah, they uncle. First of all, what happened to Uncle Cracker? Then they tried to use it as a publicity stunt because after, I believe, Justin Credible got injured, and I'm not sure what happened to Albert. So I think that's kind of when he got his own, got released, and he started booming in Japan. They started using them to, YJ Stinger with the beat of energy drink. They tried to use them to kind of promote it, but that's not working. I don't want drink stores anymore. If it's not Red Bull, if it's not Kickstart, if it's not Monster, or was it Rip It? We're not doing that.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Number three for me was the Allied People powered by Loathing Everything You Stand For. It was a one-night faction of Apple, which was led by Santino, which included Evan Bourne, Daniel Bryan, and Mark Henry. And they were a stable for one night. Yeah.
Now you knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. They were feuding with the core, and it was just in 2011. That was it. So, and there was just a one-night stable, and it was terrible. And it's when Mark Henry was wearing that red singlet that just...
Oh, gosh, the red singlet. Hated that.
It exposed every part of his body that me as did not want to see at all. So yeah, the red singlet Mark Henry was the worst.
Mark Henry.
Yeah.
As Tony Evans called him, Mark Henry.
Right. Mock. You would call him Mock. Mock.
Mock Henry.
So who was your number two?
Get ready for this one. I know you're going to pop for this. Planet Jarrett.
I actually like Planet Jarrett, kind of. Yeah, I think
First of all, the Bullet Club is going to be on this list, and I don't know why NWO isn't on the list of, you know, your faction is big, but there's a hyperlink on Wikipedia or other websites that says click
see members,
to see list of members.
I see list of members, yeah.
Yeah, I see list of members. Planet Jarrett was Jarrett, Abyss with James Mitchell, Marcus Most Wanted, Chris Harris, James Storm, Monty Brown, Team Canada, Petey Williams, A1, I forgot about A1, Eric Young, Joey Devine, Bobby Roode, Lacoste Moore, Kent James, Gail Kemp, Alex Shelley, Jackie Gator, Scott Steiner,
Wow.
Was it?
Oh, my goodness. It was that many people? Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It was. I think the Bullet Club has already tripled that list by now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right, so...
Go ahead.
All right, so let's get to your number... My number two was Harlem Heat 2000.
Oh.
With Big T.
Big T. Big T.
Yeah.
Please don't remind me that Swole was a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Sure was. And Ahmed Johnson, well, Big T, he went against Booker for the rights of the team.
Yes, I remember that. That was on Nitro.
Yeah.
Did we blame Russo for this? How do you have a match fighting for initial?
That seemed like that was a Russo thing, for sure. Yeah, it was.
It was.
All right, what is your number one? Drum roll, here we go.
Vince's Devils.
Yes. Yeah, that was terrible. Yeah.
That was
the
worst.
The females, right?
The females, yes.
Yeah.
Even worse than Special K.
Yeah, that was pretty bad, too.
Vince's Devils was, and I would say PMS, but your ruling was post 2001.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. All right, here's my number one. The Core. Such a terrible ripoff of the Nexus, which is actually really good.
Oh, Nexus, man, the Core.
The Core was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Didn't they have like a Power Ranger, like Morpher or something that they're taking on?
Yeah.
What was that thing? When did it open up?
Yeah, it was terrible. It was just all bad.
Was that Wade Burns version?
Yeah, Wade Burns. And then they had
Ezekiel Jackson.
Yeah, Ezekiel Jackson, PJ Black, whatever his name, I forgot his name.
Justin Gabriel
and Heath Slater. Yeah. All right, real quick, Backlash. We got a few minutes left. Who you got for Ty Dillinger and Aiden English?
Aiden English, because Ty Dillinger can never win.
So Dillinger's beat him twice. Yeah, I think I got Aiden English as well. They're just throwing matches here. Now they got Harp and Rowan. I mean, oh, Rowan beat him clean. But real quick, for the sake of time, who you got, Harper or Rowan?
Give it to Harper, please.
Yeah, I got Harper this time as well. Sami Zayn and Baron Corbin.
Gotta be Baron Corbin. Zayn's kind of like he doesn't win a lot. His good matches
don't leave us. Welcoming committee against Naomi, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch.
Charlotte.
I got the ladies winning as well. The babyface ladies. Kevin Owens against AJ Styles.
Owens
as well.
Yeah.
I
keep going around. Really, AJ become a face.
It was the week after Mania with Shane.
Mania, that's right.
Yeah. Breezango and the Usos, who just have terrible energy nowadays.
I just want to say the Usos. That funny, weird promo he did last week about 12 days.
And
weird,
this week.
Kinda,
yeah. This week was terrible, too.
Who
you got? The Usos?
Usos, absolutely.
WWE Championship match. Let's go Shinsuke, Dolph Ziggler. Who you got?
Wow, Shinsuke. I mean, how you want Shinsuke leaving his debut?
Exactly.
If you want SmackDown, Shinsuke.
And then WWE Championship, Orton and Jinder Mahal.
Excuse me. Randy Orton. He will be able to overcome Jinder's kids and the Jinder Juice.
Yeah, I say Orton too.
Orton is so boring.
Yeah, I think Jinder is just filler right now. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, let's real quick, 15 seconds, let the listeners know who you had on your show today, where to find that information, and where to find you on Twitter.
Stay back and listen to Under the Mat Radio on Blogs on Radio / Under the Mat Radio. We had Ring of Honor star, Nia Jax star, Bobby Fish, and we also had currently Shotty Brown, star and TV actor Martin Marcy DeMars Casus. He's talking about awesome. We got Friday at 12:30 p.m. He's coming to have just survivors on the Internet Radio. Please check us out.
Nice. Action pack lineup for Under the Mat. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, episode 268. Special thanks to Simon Dean for being on the show tonight. Of course, weekly interviews. Check out the information for next week. Until next week, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy Backlash. I hope that it's better than what I'm expecting. And we'll see how that goes. But God bless you all. Enjoy your week of wrestling. And we are out. Chris Featherstone.
Thank
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.